Hello, my name is Carlos Pascual, Senior Vice President for IHS Markit for Global Energy and International Affairs. And it's a pleasure to welcome you to the CERAWeek Conversations presented by IHS Markit. These are exclusive conversations with leaders in the industry, individuals who lead companies, individuals in government, in academia, in the financial sector, who are tackling the toughest problems that we face in the energy sector today, at a point in time when the world is also contending with the COVID-19 pandemic. And today we have an opportunity to focus on Canada with the CEO of Suncor, the CEO and president of Suncor, Mark Little. Mark, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Carlos. It's nice to see you, even if it's just by video.
And we'll be together in person soon.
Yeah.
Today, Mark and I want to take you through a journey that starts out with Canada, Western Canada, Suncor, the situation there, touches on the global situation that's affecting all companies throughout the world, addresses some cross-cutting problems like energy of transition and ESG, but what does it mean for the decisions then that companies take? And Mark, I really appreciate you having this conversation with us. Maybe you can take us to Western Canada. Take us to the situation at Suncor and help us better understand the situation that you're facing right now.
Western Canada is a large producer. We're the third or fourth largest resource globally. Our crude tends to be quite heavy and it's inland, so that logistics, pipeline logistics and such are super important to the success of the Canadian marketplace. And if you go back to the fourth quarter of 2018, at that point in time, logistics were such, and we were having what's happening globally right now was happening in Western Canada as crude prices collapsed, essentially, as inventories filled up and the logistics weren't there to clear the market. And that carried on until such time as crude oil was shut in and bring the market into balance. And it was done through government intervention, which we didn't support at the time, but that is, it was an effective way of bringing the market into balance in a short period of time. Now, bring it forward, 16, 18 months, and we're essentially seeing the exact same thing play out globally. And so in Western Canada, you're seeing crude get shut in, as you are in the U.S. Gulf Coast, as you are in OPEC countries and large producers globally. And so, and everybody's turned their attention to the safety of their people and how to manage and keep their balance sheet strong through all of this.
Indeed, Mark, you really point to extraordinary situations. I mean, who could have imagined at any point in time the presidents of the United States and of Russia and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia working together to try to push up the price of oil, right? And so there's the world that we have today. But it's also created an extraordinary conversation of how one manages the surplus of supply. And given the experience that you had in Canada before, what's the outlook that Suncor has as a company of how governments engage in this extraordinary situation and dealing with the surpluses?
Yeah, it's a great question. And when you stand back and look at it, Canada and the U.S. are the two democratic nations globally that have significant oil resource. And so the path forward, I think, is a little bit different because competition law, both in Canada and the U.S., prevents us from participating in a discussion about allocating resource or reducing production to drive up prices and those sorts of things. So if it does happen, it has to be led by the governments, as you talked about, the President of the United States. In Canada, it was led by the premier of our province of Alberta, which is the large producing province in Western Canada. And so Canada's producing 4% of the global crude. And you're seeing Texas show up through the Texas Railroad Commission and engage in this discussion as well. You know, normally we would go with market forces, but we literally have to shut in something like 25 to 30 million barrels a day of crude oil. Now, quite frankly, it's starting to happen. Prices are so low and we're rapidly filling up inventories globally. And so the oil will be forced to shut in. And I guess to the fact that we are actually, if we are going to fill up inventories, which it looks like that's going to happen imminently, the sooner it happens, the quicker crude oil will come into balance then with what is the residual demand globally, which is somewhere between 70 and 75 million barrels a day. And then we can start the road to recovery around how do we do this. But oil is going to have to pace refining demand and product demand from that point forward once inventories fill up. And like I said, I think it's imminent. So if the governments haven't made those decisions yet, it's about to happen naturally through market forces.
Indeed, the market is going to have to be brutal in some cases. And on April 20th, we saw negative prices for WTI, a shock or expected given what was happening?
Well, one of the things we saw for weeks coming into the close of the contract is that the financial markets with West Texas Intermediate in particular was out of sync with the physical market. The physical market was trading well below what the financial market was trading. And so we knew that a day of reconciliation was coming. We expected West Texas Intermediate to weaken significantly and maybe get to zero or slightly negative. We just did not expect that significant response getting down to minus $37 US a barrel. But I think what you're seeing is the gap between the financial and physical market was so significant. A lot of people were buying crude and taking it to Cushing to deliver against the financial contract. And it does seem that some of the financial players may have got squeezed on that.
I think an issue that many other CEOs would be interested in is just how you're understanding the marketplace. And this is tough because it's not just the normal supply and demand balance, but it comes back to the pandemic. How long does it persist? What impact does it have on GDP? What process are you going through to try to put together medical science, epidemiology, economics, commercial issues to, in fact, then come up with something which is rational for your company?
Yeah. Well, it's a very different process than what we've done in the past. We literally have our leadership team meeting it daily, and some for a longest time, it was every actual day that we would meet associated with it, 7 days a week, working through market conditions, health conditions, those sorts of things. We're starting to get our stride, but we're still meeting every second day to go in and talk about what's happening on the medical front. What does it mean for people re-engaging in the workplace and stopping to self-isolate? And then what does that mean for product demand and how is it trending? One of the huge advantages we have, we're a very large player in Canada. We're a national distributor of petroleum products across the country, whether it's the electric charging stations or whether it's gasoline or jet fuel or distillate. And so we're providing to all of our country and also our refinery in the US. And so we're getting quite a bit of insight, particularly in Canada, of exactly what's happening regionally, what's happening to demand. And then as specific things change, we're getting real time response basically in looking at the product demand. So looking at it through epidemiology and trying to understand, you know, are these actions safe? Does this make sense into what the provinces and such are doing or the states as they remobilize? And then how do we see that playing out? We've also been studying quite a bit of how petroleum products have changed in China, because they're much more engaged in getting back at it and trying to get a sense of what does this mean for what could be coming at us as we go forward. We fundamentally believe, Carlos, that this will be a demand-led recovery because, like I said, oil is going to fill all the inventory, so it now has to balance with petroleum products. And crude won't go up until petroleum products go up because there'll be no place to go. And so we'll see the refining margins and refining demand strengthen. And then ultimately that'll start allowing the oil production to continue to increase.
Real-time response and market forces. The two of these things are going to keep us in balance. They have to force that. And the more that you can actually understand that in a real-time way, the better off we're all going to be. I'm sure your employees are challenged, right? The whole world, everybody is. Are you able to keep them safe? And how are you working with them to keep assurances of the commitments that you're making to try to do everything possible to advance the business?
Well, it's interesting. When you talk about safety, this is huge for us. And I go back to the new purpose of our company. Our purpose that we put together was that we create trusted energy that enhances people's lives while caring for each other and the earth. And this is a purpose we put together literally in the middle of last year. And there's almost hardly a time where we engage with folks where we're not literally just talking about living it. This has almost become the language of the company. Between that and the values of the company, it's interesting. Safety above all else and stronger together are two of our values. And also curiosity and lifelong learning. All of these things have created an incredible foundation for the situation we find ourselves in today. So maybe I can just go through and talk briefly about what we're doing with our employees to keep them safe. What are we doing with our customers? And then what are we doing for the community? With our employees, obviously, and I think everybody responded this way, around mid-March, we decided that we would take all non-essential workers out of the workplace, whether they're located traditionally at a site or whether it's in the office building. So we probably have somewhere 50, 60% of our entire employee population is at home, working from home. And then the essential workers that are going to work every day to provide the energy that our customers need, whether it's moving medical supplies or providing food to people or whatever the essential workers are doing, the police force or the fire department or all of these different requirements for providing products. And so we've continued to operate all of our facilities. We've made adjustments in rates and shut in some production and slowed down on our refineries. And then to keep them safe, we kind of have two buckets that we fit with our employees. Everybody is making sure that they're self-distancing as they're working. So we've had to change the working requirements. Masks are being used in the workplace. We're doing surveys with employees every day when they come to work and testing their temperature to ensure that their temperature is normal so that they can engage into the workplace. We have camps up north, so some of our people actually transit into northern Alberta and then they'll stay in a camp and operate or maintain the facility for a period of time. That's had huge changes. We've closed all the social areas. We've had to change the way we fly them into the region and transport them on buses to ensure that they're properly distanced. We have areas that if somebody's starting to think that they're not feeling well, they can isolate in a different part of the camp to ensure that they have no exposure to anyone else. So these are huge changes. Another one that we did was we changed the shift schedule so that one of the challenges is just that the transition of people in and out of the camps is quite significant. So whether it's an offshore platform or whether it's a camp, we're having to make sure that we've extended the shift schedule. So in some cases, we've gone to 14 and 14 or 21 and 21 days on, 21 days off, so that we can reduce the transitions. Once everybody's in the camp and they're healthy, it's much easier to manage now. And one of the other dimensions with our employees is the whole focus on mental health. And we're concerned about that less so in the near term, although we see the strain of people not being able to connect physically and emotionally with folks. That's a concern, but making sure that they have access to professional services so that can help them. With our customers, it's a little different. With our customers, we have a lot of focus on ensuring that they can come in, get their product, and leave safely, and cleaning and such as we would have in our camps and stuff. Cleaning of the facility is huge, making sure that there's proper distancing associated with it and proper communications is very, very important. And one of the things we've been working on associated with this is we just put together a $3 million program that's going out to our customers. And really, it's focused on essential workers so that we can recognize them and strengthen them and come alongside and support them. So whether it's providing a meal, we've worked very hard to keep our truck stops, people serving food, providing showers and those sorts of things, where a lot of times you're seeing people shut them down. We're kind of going the opposite way of making sure they're there, because we really need to look after our essential workers. And then finally, the communities. It's interesting with the communities. With our employees now, we've contributed $1.8 million to various charities that are supporting on COVID-19, whether it's in the food banks or whether it's in caring for mental health within the community or doing other essential services through this period of time. Our foundation contributes to a whole bunch of charities that were on great missions going forward. And so one of the first things we did was go out to them and just reinforce with them, don't worry, your money's coming. You can, and we and providing the resources to them to ensure that they can carry on. We don't want them suffering through that anxiety associated with it. And then in a few cases, we've been able to intervene. So for instance, the federal government at one point early in this journey were running out of masks in some of the far northern communities up in Inuvik and Northwest Territories of Canada. Difficult logistics, difficult to move materials. And they were short of N95 masks, which is, you know, that's a challenge in almost everywhere, I guess. And so we were able to connect them with one of our suppliers. But what became obvious is from connecting them, the masks wouldn't arrive in time before these medical facilities ran out of masks. A lot of these locations were not only providing medical facilities, but to the indigenous people of our country. And so we bought the masks, put them on a plane, and flew them to all these locations to ensure they didn't run out, just as a stopgap measure until the federal government can provide regular supplies to them. So we're excited about that. And the one last thing around there is we have some real out-of-the-box thinking going on in the company. One of the individuals, it's an exciting story about one of our employees, super educated, very, very bright, thought, hey, we're doing some work on testing around naphthenic acids using an algae-based system and such. And so between that individual and Western University in Canada, they're now trying to find out, could we adapt this for COVID-19 testing? And the exciting thing about that is if it works, and they're getting some really good early results, it's going to take a few months to sort this out, but if it works, we'll be able to provide that testing very, very quickly and very inexpensively.
Mark, we'll take a transcript of everything that you said and turn it into bullet points for a list of best practices and an incredible list of the activities that you're taking on. We don't have too much time left, but we have a couple of big issues I really want to touch on with you. One is oil sands, its competitiveness in this environment. How would you explain to the marketplace how you feel you're faring with oil sands at this point in time?
Yeah, I think oil sands is the cost structure is kind of interesting when you look at it, because one of the things about Canada is so much of the economy is a resource-based economy. And so when you have, and oil is a huge part of the resource and exports of the country, primarily to the United States. So when you have the oil price drop, the Canadian dollar weakens. And so it actually helps in protecting the industry. Our cost base is in Canadian dollars. Our revenue is in US dollars. So that helps. Our royalty structure in the country also is set up so that as prices decline, the royalties help mitigate the consequence associated with it. And then the other piece is around technology. There's so much we're doing. We used to spend something like $40 a barrel to get our crude out of the ground and get it delivered to markets. Today, those numbers are sub $20 US a barrel. And we're trying to drive our cost structure down to $20 Canadian a barrel through uses of technology. And so one of the things we've done is we've implemented all sorts of technologies, like where we have 400 ton autonomous haul trucks hauling around our ore and stuff up in oil sands. And so we're not fully implemented on that, but we're accelerating the pace at which that's done. So as part of what we're calling Suncor 4.0, there's a huge focus on leveraging technology. One of the things that's really interesting is in a time of adversity, just the innovation and the acceptance of the organization to new ideas and new approaches. So technology is a huge part of our journey now, and it's helping us. Our integration is another part that's helping us stay strong through this period of time. This will be a challenge for the Canadian industry, but you're seeing there will be huge focus particularly with the oil sands companies, which is the vast majority of the production in Canada, around driving down the cost structure and continuing to be a long-term provider. And I think there's no better company in Canada prepared for that challenge than Suncor.
Mark, when we last saw each other in Davos, we were talking about environmental, social, and governance indicators, sustainability, and energy transition. In today's market, how important are ESG considerations?
If you stack Canada up on an ESG basis coming into this, I think you'll find that this is Canada is a world leader, whether it's engaging with the Indigenous communities. So last year, we spent over $800 million with Indigenous businesses and such in the pursuit of our business. It's about 8% of our total spend. And so, and this is transformative, or it's the partnership, the $500 million ownership stake that the First Nations took to become our joint venture partner that generates $20 million for them so that they can fund infrastructure and healthcare and elder care within their own community. And so these are things we take for granted, but we've been working for years around providing that foundation. Clearly, as us being a heavy oil producer, we produce bitumen and send it to market, high carbon, low hydrogen associated with it. We've been looking at innovations for quite some time, as you know. In our Fort Hills project, we literally go in and alter the carbon content of the barrel, remove carbon from it and put it back in the ground before it becomes a gas. And now we're producing oil out of Canada's oil sands that has the same greenhouse gas emissions as the average barrel in the United States on a full life cycle basis. These are huge changes, but this is not the destination. These are just attributes of where we were at when we came into this. I think that we have a chance that demand and society and how people work and interact has changed permanently as a result of this. And I think that ESG will be all that more important coming out of this than even what it was coming in. And so our focus around driving down our greenhouse gas emissions, we said our average intensity needed to decline from 2014 to 2030 by 30%. Our intensity, and we're well on track from that. Now, we had a big cogen investment we put in and we announced in September that would reduce the greenhouse gas emissions in the province of Alberta by 2.5 megatons. That's like taking 550,000 cars off the road. And the way we were doing that was not only putting in a cogen to replace our coke-fired boilers, but then we were going to export all the power onto the grid. And that power is going to allow the province of Alberta to continue their transition away from coal-based power generation. These are projects that, although they've been delayed through this process, will need to get restarted and carry on the journey because it will be more important than ever as a result of COVID-19.
Mark, I'm going to be totally unfair to you, but just building on what you said, 30 seconds, what's the vision of Suncor after the pandemic?
Well, I think it comes back to our purpose, to provide trusted energy and the emphasis on energy that enhances people's lives while caring for each other and the earth. And so we're looking for those opportunities around how do we participate in the energy transition, because that's going to be super important when we think of ESG and the future of our globe. And that is our focus and that is our journey.
Mark, extraordinary. Thank you so much for the conversation. I think on the one hand, you've demonstrated the brutal impact of market forces, the innovation it's driving, the forces, the way that it's changing, the way that companies have to adapt, but also the innovation that it's driving. But just as you're doing that, you also have a view on the future, and it's extraordinarily important that you keep emphasizing that and sharing that with our community. We thank you very much for joining the CERAWeek conversations presented by IHS Market. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Carlos. And to you and the IHS team, stay safe and healthy. And we look forward to getting together with you on the other side of this. Thanks so much.